And then there's that meme that is like, he's at Tosche Station, which actually is a strip club, and the power converters are a group of ladies dancing on stage.
And I'm sorry you have to edit this later, but what the actual f*** are you talking about? Like, what?
What I'm trying to relay to you is that he will...
He's like, I'm going to fix Ethel's powers.
Welcome to this month's episode of Shocked and Applaud. I'm your host, Lydia Malcolm.
I'm Naomi McQuaid.
And I'm Jen McQuaid, and you know what movie we're doing because you clicked on the thing.
The Last Starfighter.
My very lord.
So should we start at where we normally start, which is, how did we get here?
I think so. I think we should start with you, Lydia, since you introduced us.
Did I? I thought
to the podcast, not to the movie.
Oh, to the podcast. Okay, not to the movie. Because this movie was actually introduced by our researcher, Sean Hall. He said in a text that this was one of his favorite movies. Mm-hmm. And like, I didn't really, the first time I heard about this movie, I was thinking, is that that animated ripoff of Star Wars where they kind of have this lady bot who gets turned into a sex bot at some point? It was real weird, but it was from like the 70s, I think. And the truth is, the answer is no. And I am so grateful because this movie is leagues above like what I thought it was going to be. I was pleasantly surprised by it.
See, here's the thing. When this movie came out in 1984, I was one. And I have no reference to it. I watched it and rewatched it and I was like, I don't know if this existed for me or not. So watching it, I was like, well, this reference is this, except it came after. And then this reference is this, and then that came after. And then this reference that, but that came way like after. So, nope, this had to be a precursor for so many of the things.
The way we watched this today, I don't know if either of you noticed, was off of my Blu-ray copy of The Last Starfighter. And the reason that I own this movie is because it is one of my childhood favorite classics. It was not something that I was able to see in the theater, but it is something that I rented with my family over VHS several times in my childhood. I can't remember if this is one of the ones that we used our duplicator VHS machines for, but it is certainly one that whenever it would show up on television, I would watch it. And for a long time, it became this sort of black box thing where I remember it, but I didn't remember what it was. I didn't remember the title of the movie. I just remember watching it and being awestruck by it. So later in life, I decided that I believe it was an anniversary copy that I purchased, that I had to have this copy of this movie on Blu-ray.
It was a good purchase. Good choice.
Yeah, this was not a movie that was anywhere in my sphere when I was growing up. And like, I feel a little bit cheated by that because this is a fabulous film. Like, this is a recommendation that I will always give to people, which watching it over with these two lovely ladies, one of those lovely ladies is like, I don't know about that, Lydia.
I don't know about it, Lydia. I don't know how I feel about it. Does it know what it's saying? Does it know? Does it know what it's saying? I don't think it knows what it's saying.
Are you asking if this movie has like a theme? Because it's kind of like there on the peripheral.
No. Have you ever ordered food at a restaurant where the persons taking your order don't speak the same language as you?
No.
Okay. It feels like that.
Okay.
Because you're like, one time my mom and I were headed out. We were going to Marysville and we'd stopped in Kent to get food and like some other kind of sundry. And I was like, there's a tortoise shop. And she was like, what is that? And I'm like, it's a grilled sandwich. It's delicious. She says, I don't care. Get that. Get French fries. So I went in and I was like, hello, can I get two tortas? And the lady looks at me a little sideways and I was like, dos tortas, por favor. And she was like, sí. And I was like, and also palmas fritas? Except that's not how you say it. It's papas fritas. And she was like, no. And I was like, oh, it's not on the menu. But also I was like, you super didn't say that right in Spanish. Like, you were almost there. That if you had been like, can I have French fried potatoes? Like, close enough I got there, but like, you're wrong. And that's how I feel a bit about this film.
You got there, but not quite.
Yeah, like, I know what you were going for. I feel like it is, like, the whole concept is there for me, but there was a syllable or two off, you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess I can see a level of that.
But here's the thing. Wholly enjoyable.
Good.
So I'm not mad. I just don't know. Like, each different part, I'm going to be like,
Right.
I don't know if that translated so good.
Right. After seeing like the trailer for it, I was like, is this supposed to be like Tron but good? ?
I didn't even watch the trailer for it.
Well, unlike reading the synopsis and everything, it's so basically this movie, which we will get into, is about a video game player who has to like save the universe using his video game skills. And that sounds like Tron in a bit of a ways.
Very much so. In fact, I would say while watching this, I was like, is this Star Wars? No, it's not Star Wars. It came after Star Wars. Is this Tron? No, it's not Tron. It came after Tron. Is it Flash? No, it came after Flash. But it's all of these movies in one.
Right.
Not wrong.
So are we ready for some Sean facts?
Yes. Precursory Sean facts.
So precursor to the fact that we are talking about Sean facts, this movie, as mentioned by Lydia, was chosen by Sean. And it is also our third out of 4 months sci-fi film of 2021 reviews. So I would like to postulate and put forward for you that perhaps Cats is a sci-fi film, and we've been doing sci-fi all year long.
Agreed. Yes, it is. I will justify it later.
It's the only way to think about it.
They're aliens.
Cats is the video game that they would play in space in The Last Starfighter.
You on shore leave? Did you go and play Cats in the theatre lobby? Did you put 50 pence down and play Cats?
I got to 1 million points, but it cost me 100 million pence.
What?
So Sean facts. Box office. We always start off with the box office and the budget if we can. The box office for this was $28.7 million.
In 1984?
In 1984, $28.7 million.
What's 1984 money today for $28 million?
You're the one with the watch calculator.
But I'm going to... Lydia grabbed her phone, so like...
I'll look it up.
Do it. Tell me. I want to know.
See, inflation calculatora.
While you're doing that, the budget was $15 million.
How did they come up with another, like, a dozen million dollars?
It made nearly twice as much on the box office as it did with the budget.
So are we talking about how much money it made or how much money?
It cost. So it was $28 million to make in 1984.
No, it was $15 million to make in 1984 with a return of $28.7 million.
That seems like good money. What's $15 million in 1984 money today?
Imagine being a theater goer, watching Return of the Jedi in 1983, feeling really bad that the Star Wars trilogy had finished, and not being able to have any more Star Wars, and then the next summer being able to go in and be like, okay, I guess I get a Star Wars, sort of.
So the inflation, like how much this movie would have cost net in today's money, It would be close to $38 million.
That's still a pretty low budget.
Mm-hmm. For a sci-fi, like most of the time they're putting in like computer graphics and the cost for that is like through the roof. I mean, just listen to what we talked about when we talked about Cats.
I don't want to listen to what we talked about when we talked about Cats. Cats was a ridiculous money blender that was dumb in terms of money. Like in terms of money, it was dumb.
Agreed.
We'll get into the role of Centauri in a little bit, but The Last Starfighter was Robert Preston's final role in a theatrical film. He did appear in a couple of TV movies before his death in 1987, but he played the character of Centauri, and he's a quote unquote, according to Sean, a lovable con man, and he was written with Robert Preston in mind and was a nod to his most famous role as Professor Harold Hill in The Music Man.
That was a musical, right?
It was indeed a musical. As probably not something that will be in our lexicon for review, but you should probably check out The Music Man. It's in several available formats. And in 2004, a musical adaptation was first produced at the Storm Theater off Broadway in New York City. So this movie is a musical. And it had music and lyrics by Skip Kennan and book by Fred Landau.
Wait, are you saying that The Last Starfighter was a musical?
It was, in fact, a musical Broadway.
You're saying The Last Starfighter?
Yes.
Wait. Just to be absolutely 100% clear, you're saying The Last Starfighter was a musical?
You imagine a Bill Murray impersonator coming in and be like, Starfighter, nothing but Starfighter.
Oh my no. What the Jen?
I need to listen to that soundtrack now.
I don't know if I really want to jump into too many more Sean facts for now. I think we should probably migrate ourselves into the world of the plot.
Yeah, the depth this plot goes, the 2.5 centimeters into a kiddie pool this plot goes.
There's a lot of things that happen in this plot, and I feel that they are very well organized, because this could have been like a full season of television.
Yeah, no, here's the thing. If this was a Netflix series, I would sign in, dive in, and drink all of that nectar, but it is a movie from 1984.
Floppy hair and all.
There's a lot of whoa.
Like, I'm sorry, I'm going to repeat what you said, and you know, like,
what do you mean I've got to be a fighter of the stars?
Like, you can bet your asteroid.
No,
that is a great line. What are you talking about? Why are you so disposed right now?
Oh no, Lydia. Like, I was trying with this movie. I was like, Sean suggested it's probably really, really good. And so, like, I watched it and I was like, the entire time. I vocally, emotionally emoted how I was feeling. And it was a lot of, That's not to say I didn't enjoy it. It's not to say I won't watch it again. We own it on Blu-ray. But,
I agree. I feel like watching movies as a kid is basically like watching a movie now while you're high.
Did you ever watch Last Starfighter? That's my favorite John Stewart character in Half Baked, when he's like, but did you ever watch Last Starfighter? Well, stoned.
Any other Sean facts?
Oh, a couple of production things. This movie was released a few years after the alleged release of the mysterious arcade game Polybius. Have either of you heard of the myth of Polybius?
Yes. So a fan of the show, Chris Adilla, he's a TikToker. He actually mentioned this on his Twitch stream at one point, and I watched an entire like hour long YouTube documentary about
Polybius.
And that was actually very interesting. It's like this whole idea that there was like this game that was put together by the government. I'm probably getting this all wrong, but it was like this whole idea that there was this like mystery game out there. Maybe it wasn't put together by the government, but it was just this whole big mystery game that was put together that like gave people seizures and like did a bunch of harm to them. And like trying to track it down is like, it seems more like an urban legend or a creepypasta. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. It's sort of like, what if QAnon made a video game?
It would not be that well put together, and it would have bugs within the first second of starting it up.
Sean specifically does note the epileptic seizures that it apparently did cause kids to have.
Polybius?
Mm-hmm.
Polybius, and nightmares as well. And the existence of the game has never been proven, but there's strong similarities between the plot of the movie and the Polybius conspiracy. So that conspiracy is still alive on various online forums. So please check those out, because we are not a source of mysterious video games of the past.
If that's not in The Last Starfighter 2, I'm not going to be interested in it, because that would be a very interesting idea for like, oh, the government was going to totally like stop this one video game. And there's all this internet rumor about The Last Starfighter video game that, you know, sent a man into space.
I would also like to note that the screenwriter, Jonathan R. Betwell, came up with the idea for this movie because he wandered into a video arcade and saw a young boy playing a video game. And also at the time he read the book, The Once and Future King by T.H. White. And it occurred to him that what if a video game had been like The Sword and the Stone? And there is actually a reference to sort of that in the script when Robert Preston's character Centauri is...
I didn't administer the Excalibur test. I administered a video game.
Right. How would they know about Excalibur?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But he knew about, or he kind of knew the characterization of Chris Columbus, apparently, and a couple other historical facts, so he definitely did some reading about Earth history.
He had to be down on Earth to, you know, create, like, the character of Centauri talks about, like, putting money into the video game as, like, do you know how much it costs to produce that video game and the upfront costs and the marketing and all these other, like, capitalist things? So he was probably down here long enough to know about Christopher Columbus and the Wright brothers.
And yet he doesn't discuss how many quarters Alex must have put into his game that he assuredly got
like, was
returned
any,
for him.
Was anybody emptying out the quarters from that machine?
Otis?
Maybe.
Maybe Otis did?
Maybe he was giving them to Otis because he knew Otis could use it.
Otis deserves much more credit.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh.
But listeners, dear listeners, you don't know who Otis is. So here's the thing. Opening scene. Universal Studios. A picture of a planet. You're like, that looks like Earth. Wait, no, that doesn't look like Earth. That's a weird planet. Then it pans to a moon. And you're like, maybe it's still Earth. Mm-mm. You're wrong. Pans out. Disperses. Less Starfighter.
This is back when title credits were at the opening of the movie. And we also sort of see the same style as we would see in Superman with the fly-in of the credits.
And the music.
The theme seemed very Superman-esque.
Yeah, I didn't feel like it felt otherworldly. I didn't feel like it was like, and now we're in outer space. It was just like, Superman music, da-da-da-do, wah-wah-wah-wah, da-da-da-do-do. Superman music. Like, if Superman music melded with Star Wars music, but like Star Wars music had just woken up from a nap, that would have been this music.
Well, and that actually takes us into the first scene where we see our first living creature, which is a dog sleeping, lying on its back.
It's a hound dog sleeping on his back in the front deck of a mobile home, trailer park, a camper, or whatever your preference of wording is. But like, he's just like...
And then we see a cat coming out of a mailbox.
Okay, here's my first bad science moment of this entire film. As a cat, you see him push open the mailbox and jump out, and you're like, delightful. Mm-hmm. And I don't disagree. But here's the thing. How did the cat close the mailbox on himself?
I don't think that the cat closed the mailbox on itself.
Yeah, some jerk in the neighborhood did. Yeah. And I contend it was probably Lewis. Jerk kid?
You think that Lewis? I thought it would be the jerk in the red pickup because he was kind of like the 80s.
He's from the other side of town.
He may have been, coming
to getting into the trailer park, putting cats in mailboxes and closing it. The cat's like, cool, cool, cool. I'm going to wait till it's nice and bright in the morning. Push it.
Well, like, I could see the cat sleeping in the mailbox.
100%, but, like, the idea of the cat closing the mailbox is, like, his little nail out there, and he just pulls it closed. Nope. He would be like, cats need an out. If you own a cat, you know that they're like, I don't like it unless I know I can get out of there. Mm-hmm. And so a cat in a closed metal box would be like, no, son, that ain't good. So somebody did that to the cat.
What if it was a warm mailbox? And the cat was just like, you know, felt really relaxed and was like, I don't need to, like, I'm just saying.
There is a reason there is a phrase, a cat on a hot tin roof. Cats do not like hot metal objects.
Okay. Okay.
I don't mean to be so stern on this.
Oh, that's okay. How dare you speak harshly to us on this super serious podcast?
We're already an hour into recording.
Now, it would have been really adorable if the cat came out with like a stamp on his nose or something like that, but that's not exactly what we're trying to establish here. We're trying to establish that this is a...
It's a sleepy little camper town that's just waking up to the day.
Probably California or somewhere in the Southwest, like Arizona or Texas.
Yeah, not close to the water. for sure.
But... maybe even Nevada, because Las Vegas is referenced later.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but as they walk through this town and Otis wakes up and walks out and feeds his dog and is like, it's a crispy day. It's going to be a delicious crispy day outside. Like, Jen turns to me and is like, it's kind of an ideal life. And I was like, yeah. If it didn't rain so much and everything rots up here in the Northwest, like, I would 100% sign up for a trailer park life.
But what's great about this opening scene is that it shows the people that our main characters are kind of associated with, like...
and, like, solidly community. And, like, right. Who doesn't want and need that? I mean, like, we see it now. They were depicting it in this movie, like, oh, no, the trailer is sad. Right? But, like, Jen and I watched it and we're like, Yeah. Everybody knows each other. Everyone knows what to expect from each other. Everybody knows their place and time and space. And we don't have that.
Yeah. It shows this very beautifully by, like, this old lady who, like, sticks her head out. And she's like, Jen, I don't have any electricity. I'm not going to wash my soaps. It's the end of the world. And so there's this, like, trail of telephone that's going through. And she's like, hey, tell Alex to go at that he has to help me fix my electricity and everything. And so it, like, trails through the community.
Yeah. And we get a beautifully, I think, done sequence where we walk through and there's lots of people in the village, I would even call it. And then it pans over to, like, the girl picking up the ice box from such and such, who mm-hmm. then seeks the picnic basket from who's it what's.
Yeah.
And then that who's it what's actually ends up being the manager of the trailer park, but she's on her way to work. So mm-hmm. she's like, hey, get the picnic basket from upstairs. Hey, I'll ask Alex to go fix your power. Can you pass it on? And then grandma's like, yeah, no, I'll tell her. Mm-hmm. And she's like, hey, Ethel, I'm on a high. I don't know the names of people ever. I don't know why you would trust me at this point, but, like, was like, hey, yeah, no, Alex, can you get on? Get your power on before your stories. That's accurate. I don't care who you are.
Accurate. Yeah, I can see a real estate agent coming through saying to our 60-year-old selves as millennials, this is just a rustic micro home community that everyone has compassion for.
That'll be $75,000.
$75,000 for a trailer park? How much did I pay for that?
Trailer? Just for the home and the trailer park.
Not for the land, because you have to rent the land.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we see this kind of, like, telephone message go throughout, and it eventually lands on our main character, who is a young man by the name of Alex. He is playing a video game, and he is playing a video game specifically called The Last Starfighter.
Just a small correction. I think it's just Starfighter.
Oh, yeah.
Alex specifically is the last Starfighter because of some other events that happen later.
Correct.
So out of the manager's office comes a little girl. Nope. Sorry for gendering. A little boy named Lewis, who has a space helmet on, who's, like, shooting everybody. Like, does not care who he's shooting with this little dart gun. This little suction cup dart gun. But everybody who shoots goes, ow! He shoots the girl with the picnic basket first, and then shoots mom or something, and then shoots Otis in his own cabin or his own camper through the door.
Yeah.
And then he makes his way up all the way to the top terrace, which seems to be a little restaurant in front of the Starlight Starbright trailer park. And he meets his brother there playing Starfighter. And he's just like, he does what I did and have and still do. And Jen can testify to this. I talk like I know how to play video games to someone who's actually playing the video game. So I'm like, go to left. No, no, it's to the right. It's no, down, 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 down. No, your other left. Okay, yeah, you know, you just shoot that guy and then you toggle to the right and then you just turn that 3/4 of the degree. I love it. And I know I'm wrong, but I am Lewis in this scene. Yeah. He's like, Alex, Alex, Alex.
Lewis pulls up a bench next to him so he can go ahead and point to everything that Alex isn't doing right. But Alex is, like, been playing this game for a long time.
Lewis's hand is, like, in the screen pointing.
Go ahead and block your field of vision.
Yeah. But then, like, when they cut to the screen of the actual game, it's just a cut screen to the actual graphic. And so you don't see a hand being, like, in your way, being like, hey, Jen, move to your right. And then, like putting my hand over your face as you try to complete a complex task. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. And I will not stop.
You got to use the feather to jump over the thing in the ghost house cart race thing. You have to go that way.
Okay, do not try to school me on Mario Kart. I will yell at you.
It's like the one game you know how to play.
Yeah, but not great. Jen's better than me, but sometimes she lets me win and then we kiss.
Aw.
Aw.
And so we also see the lady with the picnic basket. This is Maggie, Alex's love interest.
Yeah. Yeah. She's everything a 1984 woman of interest would be. She has like no pelvis and mostly torso and legs. It's like legs and torso and giant hair.
Yeah.
Some bangs, some long hair, torso, no pelvis, legs.
And she's getting ready to head over to Star Lake with some of their friends. And Alex goes over to the mailbox. He's looking through the mail. He's very intense at looking through the mail. And nobody has told him that this lady's electricity is out. But it's when he's at the mailbox. That's when he hears his mom saying, Ethel lost her power. You need to get it back for herself.
First, he tells all of his buddies. Okay, so all of these. Okay, so they're there ostensibly to pick up Maggie, right?
Right.
And then they're like, you got to get in the truck. And he's like, hold on, I got to check the mail first. Mm-hmm. And then he goes over and he pulls the mail and she's like, did it come? And he's all like flipping through. He's like, no. And they're like, oh, well, I guess you can just go to City College like the rest of us. And he's all like, no, I'm going to do something with my life. I'm going to do something. And they're like, here's the thing. He calls them all basically garbage.
Yeah, because they want to go to community college.
He's like, I ain't getting drunk every Saturday night and puking and living my life in the trailer park. And I'm like, bruh. Like, even if that's true, sometimes maintaining is pretty good.
Yeah, you don't have to be an expert at everything. Sometimes I just have a good day if I get up and I get to work and I get home without like raging.
Yeah. And here's the thing. As much as I would like this podcast to blow up and us to be super popular and us to like have to go on stage and be like, hello, ladies and gentlemen, let's talk about a movie for only 45 minutes because that's how long a concert is. But we normally go for like 18 and a half hours. We're going to get through all of Schindler's List in the next one. Like, oh no. There's beautiful things about that idea and there are terrible things about that idea, but the idea of aspiring to the disparaging, as much as our podcast's name Shocked and Applaud, like, I do not want you to fail. And I think that if you survive and live what feels good, go for it. I've known people who wanted like sad, like they were embracing the sad and they were going towards the sad and they were like clocking out sad. There's so many things to try. And if you're not at that clocking out sad level, which is the worst, and I'm sorry, and I don't want you to be there, but there are so many things to try. If you're not there, which is dark and sad, and I don't want to talk about it right now, but like, if you're like, I can make it to the next day. I can make it to the next day. I can make it to the very next day. Hey, it doesn't look fancy, but girl, you're doing it.
Right.
Right? If you want to exceed and excel and become this other thing, do it. But honey, don't make fun of anybody who's maintaining or trying.
Right. And if you just want to go ahead and live in a small town for the rest of your life, you are totally allowed to do that.
If you feel like you're living big and you want to move down to a smaller town. I know lots of big fish who are like, hey, smaller pond sounds great.
Right. But that's not the theme of this movie. This movie is go big or go home.
Alex. Alex!
But here's the thing. Alex, when he hears about the fact that one of his neighbors needs help, he's like, oh, come on. But he still does it.
I do like that about Alex.
Yeah, he still cares enough about his village to go ahead and be like, yes, I will spend all day on Ethel's electricity so that way she can have her entertainment.
His mom's like, I gotta work a double shift. I'm doing lunch and dinner and I can't manage a trailer park and do my waitress job. And he's like, okay.
Nowadays, there would be one Wi-Fi router in the whole trailer park, and he would be the one to unplug it and plug it back in.
It would only take 30 minutes.
And he'd make it to Star Lake that day.
I would just like to point out that on top of his support of the people in this community, he is 5 minutes away from going to Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
I don't get that.
Star Wars, it was what Luke was always talking about. I just want to go to Tosche Station to pick up some power converters, Uncle Owen.
And then there's that meme that is like, he's at Tashi Station, which actually is a strip club, and the power converters are a group of ladies dancing on stage.
And I'm sorry you have to edit this later, but what the actual f*** are you talking about? Like, what?
What I'm trying to relay to you is that he will...
He's like, I'm going to fix Ethel's powers. And like Otis is like, no, give me a hand here. And Alex is like, yeah.
So there is a mirror in the place that we were recording that says butts and boobs.
Okay, so Maddie from Shock Talk gave me this beautiful jewelry case that has a mirror in front of it, like a tilty back and forth mirror. And when I first got it, it got a little dusty and I was like, all right. And I wrote butts on it. In the dust on the mirror part. And then at some point, Jen came by and was like, no, no. Oh, God, it was me? Okay, so then at some point, I came by and was like, also boobs. And I wrote that in the dust on the mirror. And it's been so many months. I don't want to admit to it.
I thought it was Lydia that came in and wrote boobs on there.
That's 100% my handwriting.
My point being... that yes, Alex will go and do the chore that he is asked to do, but also there's a part of him that's like, oh man, I got my own stuff to do.
Alex is very much Belle from Beauty and the Beast, the animated movie, where she's like, I want so much of this provincial life.
And then I feel like the guy who's just like, yeah, I'm the baker with the bread like always, but what you eating, lady? What you eating? Right. You need this bread. I'm gonna make this bread. I feel Otis right. in this whole part.
So Alex goes ahead. There's this time skip to the evening and he just sits down in his like darkened bedroom. And he, is this the point where he goes over to, oh no, this is not the point
he
where
gazes he gazes up his mobile. And yeah. Jen was saying that because he was mouthing something and I couldn't get it.
There's also like ominous wind that's blowing around.
Well, I mean, it moves the mobile. And then he's mouthing along to something. And I was like, Jen, what the hell is he saying? And Jen's like, oh, he's mouthing along to the radio playing in the background that's like, it's another beautiful sunny afternoon. And it's going to be a beautiful summer, according to Farmer's Almanac, because nothing changes for him. It's just, here's another thing that needs to be fixed. And you are stuck in this world that you live in. And as much as I understand that, there's a beautiful simplicity in that. And so I kind of want it. But like, dude is not having it because just shy of our parents in the 1980s is they were like, I've got ambition. I want to do something with myself, you know?
But after the year of 2020, and I know we're only like the first third of 2021.
Yeah.
But it's kind of nice to have some boring.
I will take boring.
I would take boring over, you know, the loss of human life at the hands of a global pandemic any day.
100%. I think we should not only strive for boring, that we should embrace it. Like, I would really like things to be just steady for a while. My mom was yelling at me just the other night. She was like, I would like nothing terrible to happen for a year.
Yes.
I mean, we have interpersonal things that have been super tragic and they're almost impossible to deal with. But then we have global stuff that is giant and scary, and we also have to cope with it affecting our daily life. If all of that could pause for just a second, if I only had to wake up and help Otis put an antenna on a trailer in the middle of freaking, we'll go with Nevada, super down.
Right.
But no, this kid's gotta go to space.
He goes to his friends who are just like, hey, let's go to the lake. He's like, I'm going to do something with my life. And then he has to go fix Ethel's freaking, I don't think her name is Ethel. Like, he has to go fix her power.
We're just calling her Ethel at this point. And he gets bored and he gets down. And so he goes to the one thing that actually does bring him joy. And that's the Starfighter game. And as he's playing it, that's when we see Maggie come back with like one guy in the red pickup. And he's just dropping her off and he's kind of like being a little bit flirty. And she's like, oh, thank you. But she like specifically comes back and she sees Alex playing and she goes right over to him.
I only call that guy cowboy hat guy.
That's valid.
Hey, I mean, I just came back right away because I didn't want to be away from you.
Yeah.
And she really could be replaced with a sexy lamp.
Yeah, in the grand scheme of the story. But I do contend that she has a lot more personality than a sexy lamp because of the fact that she specifically grabs stuff to go to the lake. Mm-hmm. And in this scene specifically, she's like, look, Alex, everybody else went to a movie and I chose to come back here.
He was like,
to see you.
Schmucky guy with the cowboy hat. You just happened to be on his way? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, he lives on the other side of town.
Yeah. And she's like, it should mean something that I came back here to be with you.
So she starts watching him play this video game.
Right. And he's racking up the points.
Oh, and this is where I started. Okay. So this is not a rating system as I normally do, but I'm going to say this to you because I know that you like it when I rank things in a stupid way.
Go for it.
This is Ready Player One version 1.0.
This is like 0.0A.
It's bad. It's not anywhere near Ready Player One, but you're like, he's playing a video game. Is there special?
Yeah.
Is there special at playing that video game?
And he's racking up the points and like to the point where it's like he's getting to the record breaking moment.
She does, however, and I will costume design this for a moment. She walks past him in an outfit that I desire, but I don't know how to acquire. An oversized sweatshirt that is cut at the like neckline and maybe the sleeves, and it's like hanging off one shoulder, and I don't think her sports bra is showing, but like that is my aesthetic. That is what I want. I want nothing more in my life than to wear a sweatshirt that has been cut and then droops to the side.
Girl, same.
Enough, right?
I keep buying
sweatshirts and not cutting them because you don't cut clothes that you buy.
I cut clothes that I buy, but only after I've worn them for like a year.
Yeah.
And so he starts racking up these points and Maggie's all like, oh, wow, you're going to break the record. And so she calls everybody in the little trailer park.
No, it's not her. It's Otis.
Otis?
She's like, she's like,
okay,
it's like 900,000 points. And she's like, you're going to go to the record. And I was like, you're going to the record? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, I'm going to tell everybody. And he runs. And he's like, I'm going to break the record. And he's like, I'm going to go to the record. I'm going to tell everybody.
And it's like everybody in the trailer park just comes over and they're crowding him.
It's like 3 dozen or more people who are just like,
I love how Lewis is the one who's like, don't crowd him. And I was like,
give him
child,
space. Give him space. He's got to work.
Child, you were the one crowding him like a scene earlier.
You know this about me, that I love a hype man.
Yeah.
I love an unbiased crowd who's just like, yes,
yeah.
Son, do it.
But this, again, shows how much the trailer park does care about Alex and his interests. And, like, this is a big deal, even though they don't always know what's going on.
Did you notice the dog jumped and barked, too?
And the cat, like, was on top and was, like, pawing at the... Yes!
Hype dog.
I think one of the ladies was like, what's going on? But she was so excited.
Yes.
I yearn for that kind of a family.
I think everyone deserves somebody to cheer them on like that.
Yeah. So Alex is going through and he's doing the pew, 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 pew. And then he hits 1 million points and he's a record breaker.
Yeah. And then it kind of, the whole, okay, I don't know how you felt, but like then it kind of like snubbed out that candle for me. There's like some kissing on the porch swing and everybody's going home and be like, good job, Alex. And then
Lewis says diarrhea when he sees the kissing.
Yes. I might have written that down with a smiley face that was like, you kissing diarrhea. I'm going to say that when I see something gross now. I'll be like, oh, pitch kitten, diarrhea. She's unfazed.
Having grown up with Beavis and Butthead, I want to add a cha-cha-cha to the end of that.
Diarrhea cha-cha-cha?
Because Daria, anytime that they would see Daria, they would see diarrhea cha-cha-cha.
It's true. I forget that Daria was a spinoff. Beavis and Butthead, why?
What kind of a world do we live in that King of the Hill and Daria are spinoffs of a show called Beavis and Butthead? Do you know how intelligent Daria and King of the Hill was? I mean, Daria more than King of the Hill.
Yeah,
King of the Hill had some moments.
I was also a big fan of Office Space, and that's another Mike Judge movie.
Cha-cha-cha.
Yeah.
So he comes home. He's just like, hey, mom. Okay. Do you remember this? He goes, hey, mom, this is the moment history is going to say that this all started. And she's like, she's just gotten off of two shifts. And she's like, what?
She doesn't know what's going on.
He's like, I broke the score on last Starfighter. Sorry, on Starfighter. And she's all like, she literally goes, oh, that's nice, dear. And he's all like, it's f***ing epic. To paraphrase. And she's just like, okay, so what happened was the guy who delivers our mail, presumably, saw that this letter that you really wanted came in, and so he made sure he brought it to me instead of the mail that he checked earlier that day.
Right.
Committing mail fraud because it's obviously addressed to him. Right? And she's like, well, he gave me this mail that doesn't belong to me, so I'm going to open this mail that doesn't belong. She's like, I just got so excited. I couldn't help myself. And she opens it. She hands it to him. She's like, I'm so sorry. And he like opens it like it's going to say something that doesn't suck. And then he's like, and she's like, you can always go to City College with all your friends. And he's like, ugh.
So something that you should know as the listening audience is Alex has been waiting for this loan. That's why he was checking the mail beforehand.
I thought it was a scholarship.
No,
I
it's
thought
a full
it was
on
an acceptance look, letter.
This is going to be a benefit to Alex because now he's not going to have to pay back a student loan, which maybe wasn't as excruciating in the 1980s. But maybe it was because he probably was going to go into something like programming. But
probably,
he's
really
waiting for a student loan so he can go to a fancy college so that way he can get out of this little provincial life and take Maggie with him. And now he's bummed that he doesn't have that. And so he like goes on sad walk.
Yeah. He takes the letter and he's like, OK, instead of being like, my life is great, I beat a million points and killed the big bad
commandership.
The commandership on Starfighter.
What's a commandership?
It's a ship that commands things, Lydia. So he walks up the hill to the top by the highway, I presume. And he's looking at this letter and he's just like, he crumples it up and he throws it at the sun and he's like, ugh. And then he leans himself. Okay, I know this is the safety nerd in me, but he leans against a neon sign, his full body on a neon sign, and he's like, ugh, with his hand on his forehead. He's just like, ugh. And then
what could
and then okay
be?
But like across from him is the little diner trailer that Otis works at, and outside of it is the Starfighter game, and it's just going like, and then it starts shaking. And I will tell you, at no other point does this thing shake. It makes no sense why it's moving. Auditory things rarely make things shake. And it's like,
it does feel like it's going to like beam him up somewhere rather than just be like a transmission for messages.
Yeah, it feels like it should do something more than scan things and change them later. And then, like, more than just communicate the fact that someone broke the record.
Right.
But it do what it did, what it is.
Like it should Tron-esque sort of scan him into space.
Did you say Tron was 82, though?
Yeah.
So, like, when it scans something later on, you feel like it should be doing something more than just being a fax machine.
Right.
It's not even being like a fax machine. It's like Centauri, who we'll learn later, he's the voice of this video game. And he somehow has also programmed into it to go crazy wonky style anytime somebody hits a high score.
It reminds me of how R2-D2 in Star Wars like gets all freaky and goes back and forth like do-do-do-do, do-do-do-do.
Yeah. Left leg, right leg, left leg, right leg.
You guys. Yeah. DeLorean Ex Machina.
Like, it looks like it's a mixture between a DeLorean and a hearse.
100%. It just pulls up in front of the trailer park.
There's a vehicle that kind of just pulls up into the trailer park, and then the door opens up all DeLorean style, and there's a voice that's beckoning Alex to come in. And this is the character Centauri, who is played by the Music Man.
Robert Preston.
Thank you, Jen.
Say hello to my associate, Beta.
And he's like, shake hands.
So, dude, okay, Alex. Alex. Go for it. He never hit the 2-for-1 sale on brain cells. Dude is like an idiot X squared. He is a whole dumb.
He's beckoned into the car and he goes ahead and sits down into the car, and then he shakes hands with random person that he doesn't see his face.
So Centauri tells him to shake hands with his second Beta. And when he shakes hand, he goes, "Bzzz!" and he's like, "Ow!" And then Beta immediately gets out of the car. And even though I do not think I saw this movie before today, I was like, that's a bio bot. That just scanned his He is 100% being another guy.
Right.
Either that or Beta's just a real wisecracker and had one of those electric buzzers in his hand.
Have you ever actually shook hands with somebody with one of those?
No.
It really does not hurt at
all.
It's just a little
all.
Vibration like you had a controller in your hand or
no,
something.
No, what's worse is that, have you ever been to that arcade game where you like hold hands with like Fester or like Frankenstein or something?
Yes, because we found that game at GameWorks and that was where we started dating.
On Sean's birthday 22 years ago yesterday
in accordance is April 3rd.
Oh, by the way, we didn't say this, and let's say this in part 47 of this, our
24th episode.
Like, hey, Sean, thanks for being born. Thanks for inviting me and Jen to your birthday, and thanks for not getting super creeped out when we made out in your car.
And thank you for finding so many various facts for us in each of our films that we review.
Sean Facts.
Sean Facts.
Sean Love.
Right.
That's so gross. I'm so sorry.
So back to the movie.
Anyways, that shocking game was like way worse than a hand buzzer, but had to have been worse than Beta.
Mm-hmm. And so Alex is just kind of stunned as he sits in the car.
Friggin' Centauri goes, "I got a little proposition for you. Would you not get out of the car right then?"
Yeah.
Should you not have gotten out of the car right then?
I would not have gotten in the car without telling someone, "Hey, there's this guy out here." Like, Otis is like, what, just a few steps away? I'll just be like, "Yeah, just give me a second." I go over to Otis and I'm like, "Hey, Otis, just, you know, watch things, make sure that things are all good on our end. And, you know, if something looks suspicious, maybe call the police."
Yeah, he's not going to do that.
No.
I wrote, "This guy's a murderer." Page two.
This guy's
page,
a...
Wait, hold on.
This...
Page two of my notes. Oh my God.
This guy's about to pimp me out to the universe.
So they're driving down the road. They pass the cop car. It clocks the DeLorean at 303 miles per hour. And they're like zooming down and then they hit a barrier. They're about to hit a barrier. Going that fast, dude had seen it, but and they would have hit it. Like, but he's like, "Oh no!" And then Centauri's like, "Oh no!" And he like hits a thing, and they like thing lifts up and it flips in, and then I was like, "Oh, they saved the good CGI for space," as opposed to the video game that you're like, "Okay, that looks like a, you know, like a Star Fox bullshit." Video game, you're like, "Okay, that's what it is." But then, like, okay, Jen and I are huge Red Dwarf fans, and they use models, Lydia pointed out. And, like, the models look so good in the 80s, and then the CGI is like, that's really CGI.
It's early CGI. So it's not the kind of CGI that you would see now in a sci-fi movie.
Okay, but then they're flying around, and dude, okay, so Alec is like, "Okay, cool." And then Centauri's like, "Hold on, let me take this bandana and rub my face." And Jen said it was...
Oh, he pulled a Hedwig from Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Do you remember? What, Hedwig was at this weird mall giving this concert. She takes a handkerchief or a paper towel or something, and she dabs her face. And then as she pulls it away, it's the perfect resemblance of her face. And so when Centauri does it, and it's his actual face, and then he turns out and he's like, bleep, blop, with his like weird alien face and his weird alien glowy eyes. And then they go into the... Okay, look, we'll skip through a whole bunch of my notes. They go through a warp hole, and then Centauri like takes the same rag. Alex is like, "The f-?" And then like Centauri takes the same towel and puts it back on his face and is like, "And now I'm Centauri human guy again." Like, why did you take it off? Why did you take it off? You didn't have to. Nobody. Is there a weird wormhole face takey offy thing? I don't know.
Okay, number one, plexiglass between the two of them.
Yes, agreed.
A la Taxi, like we might see in Fifth Element.
Reference.
And also, mask-wearing alien? This guy knows the future.
I believe that masks are terribly comfortable and everyone will be wearing them in the future.
Haha, pandemic.
Haha, our Princess Bride episode.
So after Centauri puts back on his face, he like pulls up something and puts it to his mouth and he starts speaking alien language. And it's all like, I don't want to try and like butcher this. It's like,
tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a-tick-a-tack-a Dick Durgadoo. And he's like, Daga Saga Dick. Like, it doesn't, like, it. None of it makes sense. They land. Freaking dude, Centauri runs away from the ship. Doesn't literally run, but he walks away. Yeah. And Alex is like, hey, let me out.
Yeah.
Let me out of this place. I don't know where I am and what I'm doing. Hey.
And he does get let out.
But also Centauri was like, oh, did we skip? We skipped it. You have to remember. Yeah. Where are we going? I'm keeping it a secret for the surprise.
Oh, that's right.
Are you the kind of kid who like would
read the end of a mystery novel?
Will you read the last page first? Would you? What's the other one?
I didn't write it down.
I don't know the second one. I know the third one.
Would you go downstairs and check to see what your Christmas present was?
Oh, that's the third one, yeah.
Yeah, but what's the second one? It doesn't freaking matter. Right. All Centauri offers him is, it's going to be a surprise. Mm-hmm. Except it's not. You guys. Applauders. Men, women, entities, persons whom I love. Persons who I do not love. Yet. You do not get to say it's a surprise when it's a possible genocide.
Thank you, Applauder, for joining us for part one of our review of the 1980s classic sci-fi film, The Last Starfighter. We still have plenty of plot to walk through, along with several moments of side banter and laughs. Looking for more great shows covering some long-lost 80s classics? That's basically the 80s, just reviewed St. Elmo's Fire, and has a great discussion about how the coffin in this movie paved the way for Lost Boys. And The Movie Cellar recently released an episode on the David Cronenberg oddity, Videodrome. Look for links to these shows in this episode's description, or on our Twitter account, @ShockedApplaud. Hey! This is your audio engineer and beta unit constructed with genuine Betamax parts, Jen. Are you a degenerate lover of profanity who wishes there was a way to hear our episodes as they were originally intended? If you answered, you bet your asteroid, we'd like to invite you to search for Shocked and Applaud on Patreon, or click the heart icon at the top of shockedandapplaud.com. For only $1 per month, you get access to our entire backlog of episodes in a podcast feed that no one else has. You'll also be helping to pay for our hosting services and keep the show ad-free. We still have two parts left of this month's walkthrough and can't wait to share every moment with you. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.